program, so buckle up. I wanted to bring you this clip. It was crazy. Yesterday, I was actually watching Fox News, and there was somebody very familiar on the network. Larry Fink, you've probably heard of him before. He's the BlackRock CEO. I know a lot of members of our audience probably aren't thrilled to hear his name, of course, but it was quite the interesting discussion given the fact that he was asked by Brett Baer, which I think was a great question to be asked, about the woke agenda and how he was obviously, I mean, he was the one pushing it, but he's trying his very best to distance himself from it. Take a listen.
Do you believe the woke era, a failed experiment, the ESG, the DEI, the kind of push for that? That when you talk about things now, you talk in a practical sense, what we can do, what we can get done. Looking back at that, how do you see it?
Society moves, the pendulum moves all the time. In BlackRock's cases, you know, we are responsible for managing money for everybody. And even today, as you said, maybe these, you know, renewables are less talked about it. I can tell you right now, we have many investors worldwide are investing in renewables, trying to emphasize solar and other things like that. They're trying to, we're working with Occidental Petroleum right now to building the best carbon capture factories in Texas right now. So do I believe the pendulum 5 years ago was too far? Yes.
You do.
Do I believe we're more pragmatic? You know, I'm personally more pragmatic, too. And I believe...
But do you think BlackRock pushed some companies a little bit further left than you thought?
It was never our intention, because our job is to be... I got to be a fiduciary to everybody who gives us money. Our responsibility, Brett, is to making sure if one of our investors wants to invest 100% in hydrocarbons in Texas, I'm investing 100% of the money in Texas. But if another state fund wants us to invest in, let's say, all green energy, we're going to do that. It's their money. But today, because of AI and the overwhelming need for power and electricity, it can't just be one way right now. It can't just be hydrocarbons. So if you see what China is doing right now, China is rapidly building more nuclear than any other country in the world. They have the largest solar fields in the world, yet they're the biggest importer of gas and oil. And so to me, more
importantly
today...
Let me step in on this,
today,
because obviously he's trying to dance around the subject matter, and the subject matter is... why are you such a liberal hack trying to push corporations into jumping on the woke agenda? And he pretends, you know, distances himself and to pretend like he wasn't the one pushing for it. But we know he was pushing for it. We actually know that he was pushing to change the behaviors of corporations. Why? Well, because there's obviously clips of him talking about just that, like clip 9. Take a listen.
Well, behaviors are going to have to change. And this is one thing we're asking companies. You have to force behaviors. And at BlackRock, we are forcing behaviors.
Ah, well, the truth finally did come out. They were forcing behaviors. They were doing the social credit score thing that we all tell you about. This is the reality behind it, folks. Larry Fink, obviously, in my opinion, is a very evil, evil man who has pushed a lot of nonsense in this country and obviously other countries, too. But things that he knows would collapse our country, destroy our country internally. But it doesn't matter, obviously, because he's a part of a class that won't be affected by any of this. And the rest of us had to deal with it over these last few years. The fact that Larry Fink, though, is coming out now and he's distancing himself from the woke agenda kind of tells me that we've won that battle. It's not a war that we've won. We won the battle, though. I can promise you that much. You know, the Trump administration, for all of its, I know a lot of you criticize them, but for those of you that criticize them, this is the massive win that they could definitely notch for this one, that they were able to push back successfully on the woke agenda, challenge DEI, and then start to pull it out of our institutions. And that, within less than a year, is definitely a big, big win. Obviously, Larry Fink feeling that pressure that the American people and the rest of the folks around the world want nothing to do with their woke nonsense. And so that's why you hear Larry Fink trying to dance around it. It was actually quite interesting, too, that he sat down and did an interview with Fox News again. I think this is all very, very telling. All right, folks, don't go anywhere. We got more to discuss in just a little bit. But if you're going to go somewhere, head on over to thealexjonesstore.com for our March mega sale. It's going on for a limited time while supplies last, up to 40% off of some of your favorite supplements over at thealexjonesstore.com.
Love knives. I know you love knives. They have finally gotten a whole bunch of the knives that were sold out back in, and they've gotten a bunch of new, really nice flip knives. These bad boys right here. I mean, these are absolutely amazing. Flip really easy and locks for you. This is Forest Green, murdered out. It's got my little signature on it, so it's a little piece of history. It's a great memento. It's a great gift for your friends and family, and it funds the operation. And they're up to 50% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're there, get some ultramethylene blue.
What do you got there, Angel Eyes?
It's a new Patriot Silver folding knife from thealexjonesstore.com.
Hey, Blondie, look at me. I got all three.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on board with us. Amir Mordazavi is joining me right now in studio. We're very excited to have him on. Obviously, he is a Iranian-American, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But most importantly, he's also a healthcare entrepreneur. And so we're going to get into the subject matter of our corrupt healthcare system, but more importantly, the healthcare insurance companies. Obviously, I know many of you at home are very familiar with that and all the issues that are there, but he's going to help us do a deep dive into that. So, Amir, it's obviously an honor to have you in studio today. For Americans at home right now who are wondering, because obviously you fled when you were a kid with your family to the United States.
I did, yeah.
And what a blessing that is, obviously, seeing what happened, what's developed in the country, obviously, over these last couple of decades. But, you know, it's important for folks to understand. I want you to walk us through the history of Iran, because it wasn't always an Islamic state. And no. That's what we were just discussing during the commercial break.
Yeah, I think if you go back, you know, to history, I'm talking like 3,400 years ago when the Persian Empire first started. There were Zoroastrians. Mm-hmm. Like that was the religion of the region. And I'm talking not about just Iran. This was like from like southern Turkey all the way down through Afghanistan. Like the Persian Empire had 35 million people in it. And it wasn't until, you know, I think 600 or 700 years ago when the Islamic states from Syria, really Damascus, came and Islamified Iran. So, you know, my parents, I think, if you say technically raised Muslim, we're not very religious to begin with. And I think almost every Iranian that left Iran that came to the U.S. is either not Muslim or anything else. Baha'i, Jewish, you know, Christian. There's lots of Iranian Christians and, you know, interfaith. But I think not very many Muslims in the U.S. because they saw what the regime did to their families and their friends and their country.
Yeah, and it's devastating to see that. What are your parents' memories of Iran? Because I'm sure they have a ton.
Yeah, I was born in 81. Mm-hmm. So it was about, you know, 2 years after the technical revolution. I was actually talking to my dad about this the other day. And I just said, you know, how long before, you know, the bars and movie theaters closed and the clothing stores changed? He said it wasn't like an immediate, like, dead stop. He said it took about 6 months. But, you know, they had all these, like, civilian militia that were, like, morality police making women cover their hair and basically, like, slapping them or caning them in public if they saw something that was against the, you know, Islamic Sharia law. Now, you know, Iranians are Shiite Muslims. They're not Sunni. So minor classification difference, but still very Islamified. I mean, my mother, who was born in Iran, went to Tulsa University. Mm. When she got back from college, she said everything was fine. And then literally a year and a half later, it was, you know, a war zone. There was, you know, people being hanged from cranes in the street. There were public executions at kids' schools. It was just very, very sad.
It's devastating because it happens so quickly. And I think that's the reason why Texans are on high alert right now, as we see all these people coming into our country who don't have who don't share our beliefs as a country. But I want to go over the Iranian flag because, you know, you brought this great image in and it kind of shows the transformation of the flag itself. Can you walk us through this?
Yeah, absolutely. So the original Iranian flag, and this goes back to, like I say, 3,500 years ago, it was always a lion. Mm-hmm. So we call it Shid-e Khorshid. That means lion and sun. That's the original flag of the Iranian people, the Persian Empire, if you will. And it changed kind of over time when it became the Islamic Republic of Iran in 1979, they removed the lion in the sun, which had strong cultural and historical significance, and they added Arabic, basically some version of Allahu Akbar. And so I can tell you a little bit about the Iranian flag. I took some notes just so I could kind of explain it to you. But, you know, the Iranian flag, which starts green, white, red, and it had a lion holding a sword with a sun in the back. The lion symbolizes courage and strength. The sun was light, hope, and the motherland. The sword was victory and justice. Green stood for nature and life. White stood for peace. Red stood for the heroes. And the base under the lion symbolizes one united land from the Caspian Sea to the Persian Gulf. Now, the Islamic, well, hopefully not for long, but the Islamic flag is just the colors with Arabic writing, which Iranians don't even speak Arabic. They speak Farsi. It's a completely different language.
Yeah.
Completely different than Arabic. Indo-European, more so like French than Arabic, but it has some Arabic just similarities. Mm-hmm. It reads the same. It goes right to left. And they really just like Islamified a country that is not really Muslim.
Well, walk us through the demographics, too, because I actually just learned something in the break, too, when you and I were talking back and forth about the demographics, the religious demographics in the country.
Yeah, so pre-revolution, Iran was, you know, all religions. I've got, you know, hundreds of Iranian Jewish friends that, you know, their parents were from Iran and immigrated here. In fact, I think Iran, outside of Israel, Iran had the largest population of Jews pre-revolution. Mm-hmm. They had Baha'is, they had Christians, they had many, many different faiths besides Islam. But I think pre-revolution, it was probably 80% Muslim. And I'm just saying that Muslim on paper, not practicing Muslim, not, you know, there weren't mosques anywhere. Mm-hmm. Now I think it's less than 20% in that 47 years since the revolution. And you saw that, you know, when the protests started happening in Iran, after the sanctions and all that, they were burning mosques by the dozens. Like every day they burned, you know, the protesters, not so peaceful, but they were burning mosques because they have just abandoned Islam. If you ask Iranians, there will be some that are like, yes, I'm a devout Muslim, and that's fine. But I think most of them abandon religion. Like my parents definitely, they're like, we're done with that religion. We're like, I don't even want to talk about it. It's created so much trauma for people, you know, my parents' age and younger too, I'd say maybe like one generation before me, that maybe they were like 10 or 12 when they left Iran. Mm-hmm. And they can remember, you know, I was only 2 and a half when I left, so I don't remember the details of it, but people that are, you know, maybe 10 years older than me, they've converted to Christianity. Like, mm-hmm. You know, I have, and they're just anti-Islam.
Yeah.
And so people always, you know, they use the word Islamophobia, and I just think that's a bit ridiculous. You know, a phobia is an irrational fear of something. I have a rational fear of it.
Yeah.
You know, because of what my family went through, because of what, you know, so many of my friends went through, abandoned everything for freedom and just came to the U.S. to start over. Didn't ask for handouts, didn't ask for DEI or anything, just said, give us a chance, we'll make it.
And walk us through that. Like, what is it like for a family to flee, obviously, their native country? But I mean, obviously, that was an easy time for your parents
so
to do
the,
that.
The country was kind of in limbo because it was a monarchy, right? It was the country of Iran, and then it became the Islamic Republic of Iran. So there was a, I don't know if it was 11 months or 18 months, I can't remember the exact details, where it wasn't recognized as a country. Mm-hmm. Do you ever see that movie, The Terminal?
No.
Well, there's a movie where this Iranian guy was traveling to De Gaulle Airport in Paris, and Tom Hanks is in it, and basically, the revolution happens and they say your papers are no good because your country is, we don't know what it is. We don't know if it's Iran and we don't know if it's the Islamic Republic of Iran. So your passport, your visa, no good. So he just was stuck at the airport for like 30 years. It's kind of a joke, but that's what happened at the time that I was coming over here. So simultaneously, when the revolution happened, Iraq, Saddam Hussein essentially attacked Iran, trying to invade Iran and make Iran, you know, sovereignty of Iraq. So there's a revolution going on, and then immediately thereafter, there was the Iran-Iraq war, which mm-hmm. killed millions of Iranians. They were able to fend off Saddam, but so there was war going on two fronts, internal with the revolution, and then the Iran-Iraq war. My parents were divorced And my dad, because he was a doctor, he had to serve in the military in the MASH unit before he could leave. So he spent, I mean, he was maybe 2 years behind us.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's so devastating, but it also, it's a good reminder for Americans to see how quickly things can turn. And I think that's really important as we're watching the protests that are going on right now in Iran. My heart bleeds for those young kids. Absolutely. I mean, they're like in their 20s trying to fight for their country. Obviously, they don't even remember what their country was prior to all of this, but they're still fighting. And it results in, sadly, we don't know the exact figure, but thousands of Iranians being killed by the government. I mean, President Trump trying his best to issue a stern warning, but you know, they were controlling the internet and the information being placed out there. And they were also controlling, obviously that controls the messaging, but they're trying their best to suppress these protesters. What are your thoughts on that? Because obviously that's something that's gut-wrenching to watch from the sidelines and not being able to help these people.
Yeah, and I think that just goes back to my earlier statement about, you know, an Islamic state and Islamist, you know, there's no separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. So what they say is the law, and if you deviate from that, it's blasphemy, punishable by death. Mm-hmm. So they don't want freedom of speech. They don't want freedom of religion. They want you to just shut up and do what they say.
Mm-hmm.
I think the people have just had enough. You know, 47 years of oppression. They're just like, you know, if I die, so what? It's not worth living in this current state.
Yeah.
So they've really, you know, created, you know, one voice turned into two, turned into 85 million that are opposing this regime. I can't tell you how proud I am of the Iranians that gave their lives. I was listening to Patrick Bet David podcast a couple weeks ago, and he had these two Iranian scholars that were kind of victims and thought leaders in terms of the Iranian regime. And one of them was saying that his sources in Iran say that the death toll, this is, keep in mind, 2.5 weeks ago, was 63,000, not the 30,000 that we're hearing. You know, it started out at 2, and then it went to 12, and then someone said 100, but it's kind of stabilized, I think, most recently at 30,000. He's saying 63,000. It could be more. All those hangings that were scheduled, he says, yes, he's right. Trump made sure they weren't hanged in public.
Yeah.
They were just killed in their holdings. You know, shot, poisoned, usually firing squad is what he said.
It's devastating. It really is devastating. And I hope that the Iranian people could now get control of their governments.
Yeah.
I know President Trump's so far, you know, the Pentagon saying, all right, don't go out there and try to get in control right now. We'll let you know when it's clear for you to jump on and do just that.
Yeah.
But don't do that right now. And so we do hope to get that signal soon to go out there and take control back of their government. Again, I know Americans don't want our soldiers, our service members intervening on the ground.
Yeah.
But I think with all the resources that they have, that they'll be able to take back their government. And given the fact that, I mean, President Trump so far claiming to reports has put a massive dent in their capabilities, obviously 90% of the military being wiped out, it looks like. So we'll continue to see it as it unravels. But I kind of want to pivot a bit.
Sure.
Because you have a very interesting story as well when it comes to the healthcare industry. Obviously, yeah. You're a healthcare entrepreneur and you've done a great job at just that. Your father is also a doctor as well. So this is, you've got the extensive background there. But I kind of want you to walk us through the allegations and how everything played out, because you recently actually had charges dismissed that were led by the DOJ, the federal government, going after you.
Yeah.
And I was reading through the indictment a bit earlier today, and it just details what they alleged was a pay-to-play scheme almost, where doctors were involved in getting kickbacks for pharmaceutical companies pharmacists that were giving out certain prescriptions.
Right.
Walk us through the accusations that you were facing, and just to remind our audience too, this whole thing has been tossed, so you're no longer facing these.
Correct.
Congratulations. This is very
Thank you.
Is very recent.
Yeah, recently. Yeah, last
8 years though.
Yeah, it's been a, you know, probably seven year process of just dealing with it. So just quick background, own multiple healthcare businesses throughout my, you know, almost 17 year career in healthcare, specifically home health, which is in-home nursing and physical therapy, pharmacy, lab, physician groups, medical spas. I mean, you name it. I've had it, ran it, sold it, exited successfully, what have you. The allegations that were brought by the government under the Biden administration in the election year, mind you, so there's some very key data points there to keep in mind, were that doctors were making money on pharmacy prescriptions that they sent. That's like the 30,000 foot view. All my businesses, like since 2013, 14, have been in partnership with doctors, legal compliant partnerships with state and federal law. In Texas, a doctor can own up to 40% of a pharmacy, for example, as long as it's not processing federal prescriptions, Medicare, Medicaid, TRICARE, things of that nature. And so we built all of our business models in partnership with doctors. And, you know, they were investigating this case, I think, since 2018 or 19. I found out that I was a target in 2019. And they're like, we're going to indict you. We're going to indict you. We're going to indict you. And they couldn't get it done. So really, last year of the Biden administration, you know, gets rubber stamped. And, you know, I really went through kind of a personal and corporate hell for 2 years.
Yeah, it's stressful. And it's expensive to fight these cases.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the legal bills were intense, yeah. You know, but what ended up happening, and this is just, you know, speculation, because we got a call one day that said the charges are being dropped, is that the case was put together so poorly. Mm-hmm. But what we found out later is that because the government had a lot of information that we were like, how did they get all this information from? Well, they were getting it from the health insurance companies, United Healthcare specifically. So let me fast forward. Let me rewind a little bit. 12 years ago, I was a minority partner in a company that had a laboratory business. The laboratory business was doing well. And in 2016, we were negotiating an in-network contract with United Healthcare. We were an out-of-network lab. We were negotiating an in-network contract. They were negotiating in good faith. And then two of our principals got in some legal trouble, not involved with our company, a separate matter, a company that predated me even living in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And then United Healthcare sued our company civilly. Mm-hmm. That's when I left, because I was like, what the hell is going on here? They sued us for $100 million. 5 years later, they sued everybody that was an owner. So, and I have emails dating back to 2018 where United Healthcare is emailing the Department of Justice, because when we asked for discovery, we said, send us everything from these email domains, UHC.com.
Yeah, that's FOIAs.
Yeah. So in all the discovery, we're seeing them colluding and collaborating, essentially weaponizing the Department of Justice against us, because they weren't getting anywhere with their civil case. So they weaponized the Department of Justice against me. And I know this is the case, because when we went, I got sued by them in 2020. The initial meeting, my lawyers and their lawyers, and said, you know, let's talk about a settlement. He only owned 1.8% of the company. Why are you coming after him, joint and several, for $100 million? They say, we'll start negotiations at $50 million. He goes, obviously he doesn't have that. Well, you know,
yeah.
That sounds good. And can you come up with something more reasonable? He says, no, and that's our number, and we are willing to spend any amount of money to make sure that, you know, these guys get buried in legal bills. That was their counsel talking to my counsel.
That's a crazy threat, yeah.
Yeah. So when you're a $400 billion company like United Healthcare that owns their own physicians, they're the largest employer of physicians, 90,000 physicians throughout the country. They have their health insurance plans. They have their pharmacy benefit managers, PBMs. They own their own pharmacies. They own their own ancillaries. When they're fully vertically integrated like that, they're too big to fail. Go look at the last 15 years of United Healthcare's board members. They're all former senators, Department of State Health Services, you know, Medicare chiefs and czars. It's like they've got those relationships with the government. And they're the largest provider of Medicare Advantage plans as well, which they're under investigation by the Department of Justice for. So they, you know, again, found all this through discovery. They basically said, hey, go after this guy. And, you know, the government did under Biden. And, you know, now 2 years later after Trump, they're like, this is no good. We're going to just dismiss the charges. And it really, it came out of nowhere. Like it came, you know, it was a random call on a Friday, 2 days after my 45th birthday.
What a heck of a gift.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, obviously, this is all, Amir, in your opinion, and I kind of want to ask you for this. I know it's speculation, again, opinion. I wanted to ask you, what do you think the motive was behind all of this, the squash competition?
Yeah, so my theory is the following. Remember I told you United Healthcare is not just the health insurance. They have their own physician groups that they own. They own 90,000 physicians. They have their own pharmacy benefit manager, the middleman for prescription drugs, and they have their own pharmacies. I owned pharmacies. Mm-hmm. And I had physicians that were partners. Ironically, they would cancel my contracts and then email or text all my patients and say, hey, why don't you use our Optum pharmacy? So for them, I think it's a matter of killing small business, like basically eliminating competition and not paying. The company that I told you that I used to work for, that they sued us for $100 million, United Healthcare owed them $52 million when we were negotiating the in-network contract. They didn't have to pay that. So when they're like, we'll settle for $50 million, it gets them to the same thing. They kept $50 million, they got $50 million from me. They just want to spend whatever they can spend because they can afford it to get $100 million.
And walk us through the process of all of this, because for our audience, you know, this is actually isn't the first story I've heard about all of this kind of happening, and I'll talk to you about it later. But I mean, I know a lot of people, specifically, though, conservatives that were targeted under the Biden administration, wiped out clean financially when it came to like the legal bills piling up. But they were all entrepreneurs. They were people who were running companies. And it was little legal things that wouldn't normally, you know, I don't think the federal government would launch and use all of its resources for.
Sure.
But a lot of these people, and I don't know your background and donations, but the people who, because I lived in West Palm Beach, a lot of these people were donors to President Trump, and so they felt the lawfare against them. But nobody was ever talking about it because they didn't want to talk about the fact that they might have been actually targeting donors as well for President Trump.
Yeah, no, I've been a Republican donor since 2014, but I took some time off when I had kids, just wasn't really involved in politics. I don't think I was targeted for being a conservative, but I do think I was targeted because I was a business owner that had partnerships with physicians, and that's not what United Healthcare wants. They want to own all the physicians. You know, in the time that I've been in the businesses that I told you since 2013, when all the pharmacy benefit managers and health insurers started, you know, getting vertically integrated, merging, acquiring, what have you, the cost of prescription drugs, the cost of care, the cost of insurance has gone up 4 or 5 times, like 5X, no question, all day, every day. So has the enterprise value of these companies, you know? United Healthcare, CVS, Aetna, Humana, Blue Cross Blue Shield. I mean, you name it. There was just a Ways and Means Committee hearing in late January with all the CEOs of the health insurance companies. Did you see that?
Yep.
It was 4.5 hours. I watched every minute of it twice because they were lambasting them about, how many of you own pharmacies? How many of you own physicians? How many of you own practice locations? And like, and how much was your compensation? $60 million, $70 million. It's all geared towards profits over patients because they have fiduciary duty to their shareholders, and they want to maximize profits by denying care and increasing the cost of drugs. Middlemen that don't need to happen. I mean, in my opinion, I think PBMs and health insurers need to separate. You know, their interests are not aligned. PBMs used to not be profit centers. They were used to manage prescription drug prices for consumers. Now they're profit centers for the big health insurers.
Yeah, Mir, I actually want to have you just kind of walk us through all of this in a second. So we're going to hit a hard commercial break here. But we'll have you hanging over for just a little bit longer. Folks, don't go anywhere. More to discuss. I want to dive into the corruption, the internal corruption at these healthcare insurance companies, as many of you guys know. So we'll be right back.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15-20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. And I've been telling you this for decades, so they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research, the human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information that the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document the potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com if you're a VIP member for 50% off, regular customers 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation, total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our Ultra Methylene Blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
Brianna Morello has the dots they don't want connected. The truth they can't censor. The American Journal continues live on X and band.video worldwide.
Welcome back to the show. We're excited you're all jumping on board with us today, folks. We still have Amir Mortazavi, who is joining us in studio. He is an Iranian-American. We talked about that in the open of the program with this interview. But most importantly, also, he is a healthcare entrepreneur. He knows the healthcare industry better than anyone. We walked you through the DOJ's claims that were made that have since been dropped. And so he's celebrating that. That happened in February. Those charges were dropped. But now I kind of want to walk through the issues that we have when it comes to healthcare insurance in this country. You have a book that's going to come out this summer, United We Fall. And as someone with 20 years of healthcare experience, this is something that I think is really important for our audience to kind of walk through.
Absolutely.
So I'll let you kind of have the floor to tell our audience what you've witnessed over these last 20 years that they should really just be focused on right now when it comes to the corruption and the greed.
Yeah, I think the system is just broken. I think the point of insurance companies, their whole kind of reason for existence was to kind of mitigate risk for people that want health insurance. I mean, that's the whole point of insurance is you pay a little now, so you don't have to pay a lot when and if and when you need it. I think what's happened is that because most of these health insurers are publicly traded companies and they have fiduciary responsibilities to their shareholders to maximize profits, they've put profits over patients. And we've seen that time and time again over the course of the last 15 years. Prescription drug prices have gone up. Cost of health insurance has gone up. Doctor's visits have gone, everything has gone up. And what else has gone up? The enterprise value of these huge health insurers. So My book, which is called United We Fall, is it play on words targeting United because they're the worst. You know, they're the absolute worst. They started this whole DOJ suit against me. They weaponized the Department of Justice against me, kind of like said, here's all our resources and go after this guy, giving them incomplete emails and, you know, oh, this is a bad email. But did you see Amir's reply? And they didn't send any of that. They sent very specific things to them to paint me in a way that looked disingenuous. My whole reason for publishing the book is I want to expose that corruption.
Yeah, from your perspective, which I think is really interesting.
They're you know, health insurers and pharmacy benefit managers, which for those that don't know, pharmacy benefit managers are essentially the middlemen between you and your insurance company when you get prescription drugs, mm-hmm. when you go to a pharmacy. And historically, PBMs and health insurers have been separate companies. What started happening, I don't know, this is back in 2013, is the health insurers started buying PBMs. They started purchasing them, and instead of making them, you know, and the whole point of a PBM is to lower prescription drug prices for consumers. They now turn them into profit centers. And I created a little graph that I sent to your producer. We can take a look at that a little later.
Yeah.
And I'll explain to you, like, dollars in, you as the consumer, what we pay, dollars out, and how much the health insurers, the vertically integrated health insurers, capture. So I call it corporate capture is the name of the slide. So our prescription prices have gone up. Healthcare costs have gone up, and their enterprise values have gone up almost dollar for dollar, like percentage by percentage. It's insane. These companies make billions of dollars a year. In January, the CEOs of all the major health insurance companies came in front of the Ways and Means Committee, mm-hmm. and they asked them a very simple question, like, do you own physician groups? Four of them raised their hand, four out of the five. Do you own pharmacies? Yes. Do you own the health insurer? Yes. Where does all the money go for our health insurance? They go to us. I mean, it was 4.5 hours. If anybody wants to watch it, it's unbelievably lambast the health insurance companies. And I had already started writing the book kind of when I started going through all this. It was kind of my way to get the information out of my head, but also to express what I was going through. You know, I mean, I'm not comparing myself to Donald Trump or Ken Paxton, but all the same things happened to me when I got indicted. I got debanked. I, you know, got kicked out of country clubs. My kids stopped getting invited to their friends' birthday parties. Kicked out of groups like Shame. You know, all the Dallas periodicals just would love to post, oh, these guys got indicted, these guys got indicted. But since the dismissal, not a peep.
Isn't that crazy that nobody corrects what their reporting was originally?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Dallas Morning News, D Magazine, absolute joke. Absolute joke. You know, they, so anyways, back to the insurance tip. So the profit centers for these companies are in the physician groups because the physician groups control the referrals, are in the prescription drugs, in the pharmacies that sell the prescription drugs, and in the health insurance. And you pay for all that as a consumer, and then you get denied care at a very high cost. And who's making money? UnitedHealthcare, Blue Cross, mm-hmm. Cigna, CVS, Aetna. It's a house of cards. And I want to expose it. I want to show how this vertical integration has been worse off for consumers. I have a plan to separate PBMs and health insurers, making PBMs almost like a government-controlled entity, similar to what Trump is doing with Trump RX.
Yeah.
Like, cost of prescription drugs is insane.
Yeah.
It's absolutely insane. And it's because they've become profit centers for these PBMs.
Well, and we were in the break talking about insulin, and that was a point, too, that we wanted to bring up as well. Can you walk us through the price of insulin? Because President Trump obviously is now trying to control that a little bit.
For sure.
That it's not a burden onto the American people. But again, that's a big issue here.
Yeah, it's not just insulin, but like mm-hmm. the cost of insulin has gone up in the last 30 years. How is that possible? Mm-hmm. You know, like and diabetes is more rampant. I think when you make stuff in volume, it should be cheaper.
Yeah.
It's more expensive. And the reason it's more expensive is not because the drug price is more expensive. It's actually cheaper to manufacture the drug. It's because now the PBMs are part of the health insurers. So they get a manufacturer rebate that goes back to the PBM. If we can put that if we can put that slide up that I sent the producer, I can walk you through exactly how it is. So if you look at this on the left side, those are dollars in to the let me pull it up really
that
quick.
One's here, right? Might be a little bit.
Yeah, there you go.
There
okay.
you go.
So the left column says this is like the patient. So the patient on average pays $590 a month for their health insurance, $20 for a copay, $40 for MD visit. They're out of pocket $650 for the month. Okay. If they go to United Healthcare, one of their pharmacies, they're going to pay a $20 copay for their insurance. They're going to pay $280 payment from the pharmacy benefit manager for the cost of the drug. So that's $100 net profit to UHC pharmacies. And then the PBM is going to make $110. So they, and then they also own the physician group. So out of the $650 that a consumer spends in a month, $525 of that goes to United Healthcare entities. That's called corporate capture. Mm-hmm. That's why their stock price has gone up. And if you look at their revenue silos, Optum Health, Optum Insight, Optum Rx, eliminations, consolidated earnings, it all pencils almost to the dollar to the top of that graph that shows you how much they make and how much they take. In that hearing with the Ways and Means Committee, the CEO said, you know, our profit margin is only 1% or 2%. Yeah, of, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. So, like, don't sit there and say, oh, you know, we only make 2% profit margin.
Well, during that hearing, too, both sides, both Democrats and Republicans
were counting. AOC. AOC was firing. I was like, go, girl. Like, I'm never going to say that again. But it was, yeah, it was very, like, unified, both on the Democratic and the Republican side. They're like, we need answers. Healthcare is too expensive. You guys are making all the profits. You need to do better.
Yeah.
Or we're going to break you up. And that's when I saw that, I go, has somebody been reading my book notes? Like, this is exactly what I've been talking about the last 2.5 years.
Well, I think a lot of people are fired up, and the Trump administration is getting focused on this issue. We saw it with the launch of Trump RX, obviously, but they're really trying to buckle down and bring down the costs and hold companies accountable.
Yeah.
What areas do you think the administration should focus on currently?
So I think the biggest thing is we need to separate the PBMs from the health insurers. You know, United has Optum, CVS has Caremark, Blue Cross has their own, Cigna has their own. Those need to be separate. Those need to get spun out. There needs to be some type of, antitrust, or it needs to be separated. They can't be profit centers for them. If they do that and make those, and maybe the government buys them. I don't know. I don't know how to fix it. I just know what needs to happen to lower prescription drug prices for consumers. They are that insulin that the price should have gone down from 30 years ago has gone up because there's a rebate going back and forth from the drug manufacturer to the PBM.
Mm-hmm.
So that rebate used to be like $1 or $2. Now it's $20, $50, $100. That's why the cost of insulin has gone up, you know, adjusted for inflation, but the cost of the drug has gone down significantly in terms of manufacturing it.
One of the interesting articles I was reading, this was probably over a year ago, was about 70% of our pharmaceutical drugs are actually manufactured in foreign countries. But specifically, I think 70% is China.
China and India.
Yeah, which is horrifying when you think about that, because they could hold our drugs hostage and then Americans could potentially die from that.
Yeah.
What do you think we need to do as a country?
I think Trump started those conversations with Big Pharma. I mean, I think they're just as they're just as responsible for the increase in drug prices as the big insurance companies. I'd say they're probably a distant second, but still fully culpable. I think we do need to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. The cost to manufacture drugs in China and India is just way less. So the government needs to come out of pocket with some incentives. And I think they've done that. I think Eli Lilly has agreed to build some facilities in North Houston. Mm-hmm. I think they said they're going to invest $6 billion, which is kind of a joke. I mean, I think that's how much they made off of Ozempic in 1 month. But we need to bring manufacturing back to the States. And how that happens is outside of my expertise, but I think Trump has the right team to do that. We need to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. I'm not so much concerned with India and China in terms of poisoning our supply. It's they can mess with the prices too, because they're not just selling to us, they're selling to everybody, right? It's not just of the U.S., it's of the world. The U.S. opioid epidemic was like 75% of its prescription opioids, and it's fraction of the population. So we're big users of drugs. China and India want to do business with us. We have to figure out how to bring that business back to the U.S.
Yeah, and I think the Trump administration is focused on that, and that's something we all look forward to, of course. Amir, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot. Folks at home, if you want to learn more and follow his work, he's got a great website set up for you. We've got it on the screen, amir-m.com. Again, his book is coming out over the summertime. I'm sure I'll be speaking with you again once that book is ready to go, but this is where you guys could read more about Amir and all of the incredible stories you have. And I love the fact that you put front and center your beautiful family, your two kids, and your beautiful wife. It's a it's a great one to look over and learn your story, because this is the American dream. And I think a lot of people need to read in on this. So
yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here, folks. I want to bring you to this next clip, because this one was really interesting. As many of you guys know, Sarah Adams, we've had on this program, former CIA operative, I believe is the term that a lot of people use. But Sarah Adams is incredible when it comes to the Islamic terror attacks that are happening all across the country. She's an expert on the issue, at keeping an eye on it and then predicting what could potentially happen here on the homeland and preparing you all at home for that. She actually has a brand new warning out regarding Al-Qaeda and the terror attack that they plan to carry out here in the homeland. And that's in clip 15. So let's take a look at that.
Welcome to The Watch Floor. I'm Sarah Adams. Today we're covering one of the topics we get the most questions about. Can you walk us through Al-Qaeda's current aviation plotting related to the U.S. homeland, right? Al-Qaeda doesn't come out and give you the entire framework of a plot. What they do is leave breadcrumbs, and then you have to figure it out, hopefully in advance. So unfortunately, a lot of times, it's after the fact where you learn a lot of pieces. But again, there was the 2006 liquid bomb plot that was thwarted. So the more we can get ahead of this, we can thwart it and save a lot of lives. So today we're going to walk through, you know, what we know about this plot. Others might have different information, and that's okay. There's a ton of aspects to this plot, a lot of gaps, a lot of unknowns. All we're doing is getting the information out there so everyone can be more alert and more prepared. When we talk about this plot, like anything, of course, it has objectives. And the plot has three main objectives. The first is turning past failures into success. So there's a number of aviation plots that never came to fruition. We had the shoe bomber, the underwear bomber. We just told you the liquid bomb plot, etc. So we're going to talk a little bit about what that means today and what plot they're focused on the most from the past that didn't come to fruition. Another thing is they want to prove that our Department of Homeland Security, this huge organization we created, and specifically, you know, TSA within it, is completely useless. They want to say, hey, they can't protect you. We can get bombs on aircrafts and we're going to show you. So that's something to keep in mind, and it's a huge part of this. The last piece is they want to finally execute a successful operation using the invisible bomb, or as Al-Qaeda likes to call it, the hidden bomb. So we're going to explain to you what this bomb is, how it looks today, and why they think they'll be successful. And there has been innovations to it. A lot of people are still thinking about the bomb from like 15 years ago, and it is much different today. And so we're going to explain, you know, the pieces we can say publicly about that. Of course, you know, Al-Qaeda is always monitoring what we're going to say and what we're sharing. And of course, then they change their tactics and techniques. It's unfortunately why you can only share so much, but you need to share enough in the hopes to thwart something like this. It's a very delicate balance, unfortunately. When we say turning past failures into success, this is very important for people to understand. In December 2023, Al-Qaeda's core leadership had their Yemen branch, so AQAP, put out a video kind of threatening the West and hinting about this aviation plot. Now, the interesting thing is there is really useful information in the video, and then there's information in the video to make law enforcement go off on wild goose chases. So you have to spend a lot of time, you know, on this video. And luckily, we've collected a lot of information since this video to really see what you need to see and not what Al-Qaeda wants you to see. So if you just took the video at face value, you would think Al-Qaeda's plot is to get a lone wolf or a lone attacker, so someone who's just inspired by the video, to make this homemade version of the invisible bomb in their kitchen, take it on an airplane and blow it up, okay? So they want you to think that they're looking for someone out there to be another Umar Farouk, who was the underwear bomber. That is not the plot. But again, that's what they want you to think of the plot. It's just this one-off person, and that's why a lot of people don't take the plot seriously. So the plot isn't based on the failed Christmas Eve airline plot. The plot is actually based on Bojinka. So if you don't know Bojinka, we are going to walk through it today just for an understanding of it, because it was a plot that was thwarted 30 years ago. So it's not even in recent history. It is so far back in history. So this plot was a mass casualty aviation plot, and it was thwarted in 1995, pretty much accidentally. So the masterminds were Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who obviously was the mastermind behind 9/11, and Ramzi Youssef, who most famously was involved in the first World Trade Center bombing. Remember, if Al-Qaeda thinks they weren't successful, even though the World Trade Center bombing was, they will come back again and bring the plot to fruition. And that's, of course, what happened on 9/11. So we have some of these historic actors going all the way back to this plot. The goal was to down 11 to 12 airliners traveling over the Trans-Pacific into the United States. We got lucky because Ramzi had like an electrical fire in his apartment. You know, law enforcement showed up, and when they did, they found, you know, all these pieces of the plot, and it was just weeks away from occurring. It was also at that point that they found out, oh, in December 1994, there was a dry run of this bomb on an airplane. Luckily, in that case, it only killed the bomber, and the pilot was able to successfully land the plane, and there was no other fatalities. So it was interesting that no one ever connected the dry run to an actual plot. And it's something we have to keep in mind, because that unfortunately happens, and we really want to be on top of these things, right? There are no coincidences. There are other waves to the plot, Bojinka, if you know it. Of course, they wanted to take a plane into the CIA, they wanted to kill the Pope, etc. But really, the piece we care the most about is the dozen airliners. Now, the bombs are a little different. The goal was to put kind of these liquid explosives into everyday items, and the focus was like a contact lens solution. So that bottle, so just think of it that way. That is not what the bomb looks like now, but just to be aware, they have continually evolved this. And of course, the 2006 plot was also liquid explosives. A lot of people, you know, say Bojinka was the prototype for 9/11. It was a piece of it. But within Al-Qaeda, Bojinka has yet to be completed, and they now want to bring it to fruition. So what we're seeing is the potential that they want to do a Bojinka-style plot of a dozen airliners, but all over U.S. soil. So it won't be this time transatlantic like 2006 was, or trans-Pacific from what we know, because they want all the attackers to get on the planes at a U.S. starting point, so from a U.S. airport. And so we all blame our government. It's not like you can say, well, he got on the plane in Paris. It's the French government's fault. No, it's going to be the U.S. government's fault, because they're going to get on at airports in the United States.
All right, folks. Sarah Adams does a great job of breaking all of this down. And I highly recommend, if you're not doing so already, to give her a follow on X. Most importantly, she got her show. It's the Watch the Floor, I believe this is, the podcast. She just recently launched it. And she's one of my favorites when it comes to understanding the threats to the homeland and what's taken place overseas as well throughout the Middle East. So definitely worth the follow. And again, we have her on the show often, but she's a very busy woman, a very, very busy woman. And so she is doing a great job, though, at her own show. And I just want to make sure we play that little snippet for you so you all check it out. I wanted to also tell you the third hour of the program, which is starting soon. Time is flying by these days. We'll be taking your calls, 877-789-2539. That's 877-789-2539 is the number you can call into the show. We want to keep it focused on the topics we've discussed thus far. Keep it relevant to the news, because I've got a lot to talk about still to catch you up on, because we haven't even touched the surface when it comes to the headlines. A lot happening in just a little bit. I don't know. Let's actually throw clip 12 out there. You know, CNN, I told you all CNN was lying. They were full of nonsense. In clip 12, Abby Phillip, as many of you guys know, she hosts one of the night shows over at CNN. Well, she actually had to offer a correction because, well, she was trying to coddle the Islamic terrorists that tried to carry out, allegedly, of course, a terror plot on, well, New York City over the weekend. Take a listen to clip 12.
This morning, I issued a correction first thing in the morning on X for a mistake that I made in last night's show, but I also wanted to do so on air as well. I incorrectly said that the bombs that were thrown by ISIS-inspired suspects in New York over the weekend were directed at Mayor Mamdani. They were not. I failed to catch and correct that mistake in real time, and I take full responsibility for that. And while we do make mistakes, it is important to acknowledge and correct those errors when they happen.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. By the way, CNN, it wasn't just her. It wasn't just Abby over there pushing that lie. It was also those who were operating their social media pages. We told you they had to fix and take down their post after trying to say, oh, they're just two teenagers enjoying a rare good weather day in New York City. And all of a sudden, this happened. Yeah, they'd hate to piss off their jihadist audience members, of course. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to do that? All right, folks, more happening in the third hour of the program. In the meantime, though, head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. We have iodine that just recently launched on thealexjonesstore.com. 50% off for you VIP members because we appreciate you. So we'll extend a discount your way. If you're not VIP, though, we'll still give you a discount. 25% off, though, for those who are not VIP. But I don't know why you wouldn't want to be a VIP member, because you're helping our efforts and telling the truth, obviously, in this information battle. But you're also going to be getting a great discount over at thealexjonesstore.com. Also, it's the March Mega Sale going on right now, up to 40% off your favorite supplements over at the shop for a limited time. So head on over to thealexjonesstore.com.
As InfoWars not delivered. In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the info war continues on, regardless as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click of your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March Mega Sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet, up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.